In May, we reported on Matt Schlapp and his American Conservative Union, long a megaphone for painting progressives as traitorous globalists, bringing the Conservative Political Action Conference to Budapest, Hungary, and celebrating the relentless dismantling of Hungarian democracy by strongman Viktor Orban. It's an ongoing source of grave concern for observers around the globe, but not for the U.S. right-wing activists and politicians who shared the stage with a prime minister who urged them to mimic the, quote, Christian conservative success of his nation. Earlier this month, the CPAC gathering in Texas amplified these Christian nationalist themes and welcomed Orban back to the stage for another chance to put the vision these purported patriots have for the future of our nation. Journalist and author Sarah Posner has long been sounding the alarm about the goals of the American political religious right, so she was the least surprised at the applause Orban got for the rhetoric like claiming the West is, quote, locked in a clash of civilizations. Sarah, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thanks for having me again, Jack.
Orban welcomed American conservatives to Hungary in May, and his authoritarian speech there guaranteed he'd be prominently featured at the CPAC gathering on U.S. soil just a few weeks ago. Is this a growing alliance, or is he simply an effective speaker pushing the boundaries of what American conservatives could actually say?
This is a growing alliance between Orban and the American right that has been in motion for several years now. The alliance was sought out by American political strategists and consultants, and likewise, Orban sought out the assistance of American lobbyists in burnishing his image to American audiences. So he hired lobbyists to portray him to the American public as just a regular old conservative like American Republicans who was under siege by liberals and, you know, political correctness and the like. So this has been going on for a while, and it's really reached a fever pitch now with the very formal handshake of attending each other's CPACs in Budapest and in Dallas.
I actually wonder if there are any boundaries at all on what extremists can get away with saying and still find a home in today's conservative movement.
I'm wondering the same thing. Just before he went to Dallas, Orban gave a speech in which he decried the mixing of races and that Europeans wanted to stay European. This prompted one of his top ministers to resign in protest, saying that this was pure Nazi talk. And it was. And so if pure Nazi talk is not enough for CPAC to cut ties with Viktor Orban, I'm not really sure where their line is.
So tell us, who else addressed the CPAC gathering, and what was the overall tone?
There were a number of usual suspects that you might see at a CPAC gathering, Republican office holders and Republicans who are running for president, Donald Trump. And the tone was combative, and the tone was also in line with a lot of the American right-wing rhetoric at the moment, that they are the ones who are persecuted and under siege by the deep state or by wokeism or by the tyrannies of liberalism that are, you know, supposedly trying to dictate how everyone thinks.
Did anything stand out for you as either hope-giving or hope-crushing?
There was no hope-giving there. As far as hope-crushing, I mean, I guess just the fact that Orban was there, just the fact that one of his own ministers accused him of sounding like a Nazi, which he did sound like a Nazi. And so that gives you very little hope that there is a line that the American conservative movement or the Republican Party as a whole will draw. And we've seen other evidence that they're really not drawing that line in the comments of many of the Trump-endorsed candidates who are running for office this year. And they're headed in an incredibly dangerous, inciting direction. And it appears that there are no guardrails.
Sarah, as we head into the midterms, I know some of the arguments tested at gatherings like CPAC will find their way into mainstream campaigns. What should we be on the lookout for?
Some of the predominant themes in many of these campaigns are first and foremost, an adherence to the stolen election lie. Second, an adherence to the idea that liberals or woke people or wokeism or gender ideology is or groomers are coming for your children, and that public schools are a place where your children are going to be indoctrinated with globalist, leftist propaganda. And we need to work to restore the Christian nation. They're going to be pressing those themes, but I think that they're also, in recognition of the unpopularity of the Dobbs decision, going to be running from their own records on abortion, where they have opposed throughout their political career any abortion rights, but they don't want to talk about that because they know that Dobbs is incredibly unpopular, as are the laws that, the trigger laws that came into effect immediately after Dobbs, or any of the laws that are being passed right now in red states. So they're going to run from that, yet at the same time, they're going to focus on these other culture war ideological clashes that they think have proven so potent for them in the last couple of election cycles.
Sarah, you have a new article out on Talking Points Memo called "The Christian Right Plots How to Avenge the FBI Raid." We're sort of mystified at the continuing hold that Donald Trump seems to have on the activist wing of the religious right. Can you talk about that a little bit?
For them, he is still the anointed leader. He is still the leader that God chose to shepherd America through this period when it's under siege by wokeism. And that's basically the summary of how they view it. So they are all in with portraying any criticism or holding accountable of Donald Trump to be politically motivated or to be illegitimate in some way. And so the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago, to me, was a significant inflection point for them because they had previously, been supposedly, apart from January 6th, on the side of law enforcement. The FBI traditionally has been a bastion of, white male Christian dominance. And I think that this really struck a chord with them or struck them as unacceptable because an institution that had long been, in their eyes, a defender of their cultural dominance, in their view, had turned on them or had turned on the anointed leader. Charlie Kirk, the conservative campus activist who's increasingly becoming far more popular in evangelical circles, he basically called Mar-a-Lago, hallowed ground. He said that the FBI had desecrated it. So they're really continuing to imbue Trump with this messiah status and to really attack anyone who may try to hold him accountable for wrongdoing, because in their view, he cannot engage in wrongdoing. And they're discussing him as being persecuted by the deep state or by the FBI, at the same time that anti-Semites were attacking the magistrate judge in the case who had signed off on the search warrant, Bruce Reinhardt. He came under attack from anti-Semites. His synagogue had to cancel their Shabbat services because of these threats. Yet the religious right persists in portraying Trump as the one who's being persecuted.
And with the Family Research Council building this massive media network, what kind of escalation of this rhetoric and proposed action can we expect?
Well, the Family Research Council is probably the religious right's most powerful political organization, with ties to Republicans in Congress and Republicans in state legislatures around the country. Its president, Tony Perkins, is probably one of the most respected figures in the movement. And so it already has a very significant media reach, and reach just through social media and its relationships and ability to get very high-level guests on their programs and at their conferences. So any uptick in its media reach through new newsletters or new radio programs or podcasts or even television would represent, you know, an even greater outreach and greater repetition of the kind of content that they push out to their followers. And they, too, are pressing this idea that, for example, the raid on Mar-a-Lago was illegitimate, that we can't trust the FBI. I think that they're going to just continue to press the idea that any investigation that holds Trump accountable for any alleged crimes is illegitimate. And I think that when you have built a base that believes that God anointed Trump, to say that, you know, duly authorized law enforcement officials are illegitimately investigating him is actually quite dangerous and potentially inciting to a lot of people.
Sarah Posner is a reporting fellow with Type Investigations and author of the books Unholy: How White Christian Nationalists Powered the Trump Presidency and the Devastating Legacy They Left Behind, and God's Prophets: Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values Voters. Sarah, thanks very much for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Thanks so much for having me, Jack.